Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
We're just going to hold it for a minute. Christiana, thank you for popping in from the UK. Brains, look, we've got a fitness instructor, a former nurse, a breastfeeding coach. This woman has done it all, and I'm so glad to have her here with us. We're going to talk about Pilates. We're going to talk about how your body contracts and how we need to keep that elasticity. It's good for your brain health, your body, your digestion, all of these wonderful things. So I'm so glad to have this professional here with us. Hello, Christiana. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm really, really very thrilled to be here with you.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you too. Thank you so much for being here. Tell us a little bit about your story and your fitness journey.
Okay.
So you can get rid of the card now, girl. They know where they at.
Okay, I can get rid of it.
You're right. Okay,
so because I had talked a lot with my hands and I don't know what to do with a sign.
Okay.
And so it's actually, my story was like, it's like everything upside down. No normal person would have done it.
Wow.
So I had my son was 16, or I fell pregnant was 16. And so my dream to become a doctor went a little bit out of the window at that stage, because I wanted to finish my A-level and then studied medicine. But then it was more practical, actually, when you finish your A-levels and you have a 1.5-year-old, to do actually something where you earn some money and not sit at
home. Right.
And that was a bit of a no-brainer. So me and then my husband at that stage, so we went both in our training. So I studied nursing and done that. And on literally, after I'd done my exam, my husband got a job down in South Africa, Germany is down there. So we were in Germany still, and we had to move. We moved to South Africa,
wow.
And which was something totally strange for me, because—
Girl, I'm sure it is.
It was like, because what you were hearing in the news about South Africa at that stage, it was 1986. Yeah. So I got a lot of flack from a lot of people taking a child down there and whatsoever and so on. But never mind, we went. And it was actually, apart from apartheid and whatsoever, and I really don't want to get into this political thing, because I think we can be that for the next 5 hours. But I decided that in South Africa, first of all, they didn't take my nursing certification.
Right.
Because I had an European certification, I could earn in England and they would employ the English nurses, but I could not, as a German nurse, work in South Africa. So that was a bit upside down. And so I decided to have two more children. So I had two beautiful girls, but now I needed to do something with my life. I was always medicine fascinated. So one of the things I did was, because I was very much into breastfeeding, to become a breastfeeding counselor myself. So I did that. That was a total freelancing and volunteering work. And I really enjoyed it, because the whole, and especially probably at this stage, and it's I can see it here now with my daughter who just had a baby 3 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. There's a lot more support about breastfeeding. And certainly there's a lot more support than I got at that stage in South Africa.
And I'm sure. Can we dial back a little bit to you being a mother at 16? I want to ask you a couple of questions about that. Were you married at that time?
No, I had the boyfriend. I married the boyfriend then eventually, okay, 4 years later. But not right at the beginning. No, I wasn't married.
It's very, very difficult for, young women. My mother was a mother at 15, and you don't even know yourself, much less bring another child into the world. What would you say to a young girl that's in that situation right now? There's, you know, here is so combative. You've got a right to choose. You should have a right to choose. And if you choose life, that's fine. You want the support of your family. You want the support of your community, but you get so ridiculed. What would you say to a young woman that's in that situation right now?
Believe in yourself, and your education is the most important thing and the best gift you can give you. Because I've seen it so often at that stage that girls got taken out of school and then they were staying at home. And I remember my mother saying to me that under no circumstances will I stop school, because this is my life and I have to be able to stand on my own feet. And that was the best thing. I would have never stopped school anyway, but I got the support to stay in school and be educated. I'd done my A-level. I went into my nursing training then. And it is very difficult if you don't have the family support. We had the family support. And that was very supportive. So get yourself as much support as you can. And yes, you get ridiculed. You don't get taken seriously when you're 17 years old. The advice you get is totally different to somebody who is 25 or 30 or something like that. So you really have to fight for your rights. And it's difficult because, like you said, you don't even know who you are really. You're insecure. You feel a bit guilty on top of it that you put everybody into that situation. And so believe in it, because that's the beginning of your life and it's the beginning of your child's life. And it's always be that start. It will never change. So make the best out of it. Don't throw it away.
Okay. And young women, listen to this advice. She had the support. There are some of you out there that don't have the support. And really, you know, we are two women of a particular age. Back in the day, you know, when you were pregnant, to be pregnant at 16, I mean, that was the talk of the town. I mean, how in the world could that happen? But now you have options, young ladies. You have clinics, you have coaching, you have online information that you can avoid unwanted pregnancy.
People are more open-minded also now. I wanted to become pediatric and to go into pediatric nursing. I wrote 50 alone in Hamburg in Germany. That's a big town. Mm-hmm. I wrote 50, over 50, in English, letters to get the apprenticeship.
Okay.
None of them took me. It was always like, after we read your letter, we decided that we have no space free. And that was only because I was unmarried and had a child.
And you had to disclose that, right? Because wherever you go to, you're going to take your child with you. Also, can you talk to them for the young women that are pregnant right now, or even women that aren't pregnant? I mean, are pregnant, but are thinking about breastfeeding. Can you tell us some of the challenges that you see with women breastfeeding? My daughter didn't latch on. And I'll tell you, you know, I didn't feel guilty. There's a lot of guilt and there's a lot of shame put on mothers that do not breastfeed their child. That just wasn't me. She was nourished, made sure that she was fine. We were close. We bonded. But that wasn't just something that was a part of her upbringing, and her immune system was fine. So tell me some of those and some of the cons that you see with breastfeeding.
So first of all, I think it comes to what is your lifestyle like also? I think that's first of all, you should never feel guilty whatever choice you make. Let's just put that plain on the table. I'm very pro breastfeeding. I fed my last child for 3.5 years. And but my first child, I didn't get taken seriously. I didn't get any help. So I stopped after 6 weeks because I had to go back to school. I could have expressed or anything like this. There would have been options. So there are options in both directions. And today the nourishment, when you decide to bottle feed, that is your decision and you should never feel guilty about it. What if you have to go to work? Are you going to sit in the toilet if there are no adequate rooms for you to express? And yes, some mothers do that, but not everybody can do that. If you're going to back-to-back meetings, what are you going to do? Express all the time? So sometimes it really doesn't work. And then you cuddle and hold your baby and stimulate it and play with it exactly like you would do as if you're breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And don't feel guilty about it. Really don't feel guilty about it. If you want to breastfeed and you're really behind it and you are convinced that this is the right thing for you, then seek all the help you can get. There's a lot more help now out these days. And people here, I see it as beautiful here. The midwife comes to the house and helps. And I mean, I didn't have that in South Africa and nor in Germany.
Well, let's talk about the wet nurse. My niece did that. I was, again, you know, I looked at her with a side eye. I did not understand it. Well, from a cultural perspective, Black women were white women's wet nurse for centuries, from slavery. So what is that about? I mean, I don't know. I would feel some kind of way about another woman nursing my child. I'm thinking about their health. I'm thinking about the health of my child. I'm thinking about them bonding. I don't know. Am I in my feelings too much? What's your position on being a wet nurse?
I didn't personally come across it. And I think, I mean, maybe I get ridiculed for that now. Maybe it's a little bit antiquated. Maybe it was something at times where it wasn't fashionable for, like you say, for the upmarket woman or so to breastfeed. And but there weren't other options. Then there wasn't the same nourishment as bottle feeding or good bottle feeding. And it had a place at that stage.
But they're still doing it now. Like I said, my niece had a baby about 4 or 5 years ago, and she wasn't producing enough milk. She took her daughter over to a neighbor's, and the neighbor gave milk and expressed milk for the child. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, yeah, it's like a little bit falls into this same pattern as surrogate motherhood, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like, are you giving the bonding time, the nourishment? I mean, your the milk is changing as the child grows. So if she would feed the child continuously, the milk would change for the age of the child and would always be 100% perfect for that child at that stage. So for the child, it would be good. The question is, are you prepared to give your child to somebody else?
No, it's emotional.
So I wouldn't. But maybe the thought behind it is that this is the best nutrition I can give to my child, and therefore I will sacrifice, if we turn it around and see it from the other side, and therefore I sacrifice my time with the child. Mm-hmm. And I think you also have to have a really good relationship
right
to that lady who will breastfeed your child. You have to trust them implicitly. You have to know that they're 100% well nutritioned, that they don't smoke or drink or anything.
Right.
It's a huge responsibility on both sides.
It really is. I wanted to ask you a little bit about nutrition overall. You know, when a mother is breastfeeding, you know, again, you remove the alcohol, you remove the drugs, the smoking. What kind of things really help build up good breast milk? I mean, I'm sure fruits and vegetables. Should they take supplements? What would you suggest?
Well, we had always like what we called Schlieren Elixir, that to us, and I'm sure you get it in America as well. It's it was just like a natural thing, and there's a lot in the health stores which you get to promote milk. So you have to have your normal vitamins, your antenatal vitamins, and that you're carrying on your sufficient amount of calcium, because you need a lot of energy and nutrition to produce the milk. So you have to put that back into your system. And then comes the question, what goes into the breast milk, what your baby maybe can't actually cope with? And there's a long list from people, and everybody has a longer list or a shorter list. What you all shouldn't eat, because it gives your baby colic, it makes your baby not sleep, it makes your baby do this or that and whatsoever. And by the end, you cannot actually eat anything anymore. And you drive yourself crazy. So I always said to my mothers, try it out. If your baby really has colic, maybe you shouldn't drink 10 cups of coffee. You shouldn't drink them anyway, but maybe you should think about that a little bit. Chocolate, sugar, these things, they can produce gas in you. If they can produce gas in you, then it can also produce gas in the baby, isn't it? If your baby is prone to that, maybe you have to do a little bit try and error, but it is really try and error for everybody. It's different, and it is different for every baby and for every mom. Every situation is different. And I think that's what one mustn't forget, that every mom is different, every baby is different, every situation is different, and every day is different. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if we remember, can we remember our other newborn days where you from one day to think, I got it, finally.
Let's talk about another judgment that people have. You said that you nursed your baby until 3 years old. I had another friend that her child was 5 years old. Now, the child can eat chicken wings at that particular point. They can eat potatoes. They can peel a banana. And he crawls right up into her lap, pulls up her shirt, and does this. I don't know how I felt about that. I felt uncomfortable and awkward. I'm being real with you brains. I'm not, you know, other people are feeling the same way. I didn't want to tell her not to bond with your child. I don't want to be sitting in judgment. But is there a certain point that weaning should be? I mean, like potty training. Is there a certain point that a mother should detach? And each child is different. I get that. But, you know, 3, 4, 5, they're walking, talking, they're sitting at the table, but they're still nursing. Explain that to me.
Well, that was actually the last of my four children. And one of the things was probably quite selfish also that I didn't want to give it up because I knew
that. Okay, because that's what I'm saying. Is it, you know, it's the mother too. It's the mother too.
But and I think the whole breastfeeding journey is about it's about the mum and the baby. And what is right for the baby is fine. And what is right for the mum is fine too. And that does.
So it is, you know, a relationship between the mother and the child, but it's a selfish thing of the mother, but also the child. But I don't know, psychologically.
So I fed my daughter in the last thing, I think only in the morning at night. And it is purely a comfort thing at that stage, in my opinion. I wasn't going out and feed her somewhere in the middle of, I don't know what, McDonald's. No, that's not a good example, but in the middle of a restaurant.
Yeah, right, okay.
And so it was really like in the morning at night and in the evening. And it actually came naturally to an end because where I felt that she wasn't interested anymore and I was ready to also let go. But trust me, I was crying tears because that it was a huge thing to suddenly to give up. The two girls I had before, I fed them just over a year. And then they started walking with my boob. And
walking with it, pull it along.
They don't take the nipple out of my mouth, and that's blimming sore. So they wanted just to be mobile. They weaned themselves. So they had a bottle then or a zippy cup or something like that. And that's so totally two sides. It was the one situation, and it was right the other situation for me.
Right.
And I think that's a judgment. I'm not too sure how I feel about a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old or something like this when they go to kindergarten or something like this. And
I was feeling a certain kind of way, and I was, you know, I kept my mouth shut, but I was observing. But I don't know, you know, like I said, I understand it's a mother and a child bond. There's nothing that could separate me. And I'm wondering, okay, well, am I judging because I wasn't a mother that, you know, breastfed my child? Do I not understand that? Was it psychological, you know, her? Was it, you know, a longing for the child? I don't know, but thank you for explaining that. So now we are at that stage where we are trying to build back better our bodies.
Yeah.
And you have really taken that to a different level. You look absolutely stunning. You are a Pilates instructor. Before we get into that, I want you to really kind of explain the philosophy of Pilates. What I see, it looks like a combination of traditional stretching exercises and yoga, but it's more of a muscle and a strength building type of exercise. Explain Pilates and the history of it.
Okay, I will do that because it's quite actually quite fascinating. When so Mr. Pilates, and it was really his name, it was his surname, he was actually quite a sickly child, but he wanted to overcome that and sort of taught himself and made anatomical charts of himself, because there was nothing at the stage. He was born in the late 1900s. So, you know, there was nothing. He died 1967 when he was 80. So you can imagine then when he was young, there was nothing like this about. So he went actually to the circus and all sorts of things to keep himself strong and overcome the rickets he had gotten in Germany at that stage, a very a common thing because of the lack of sunshine and so on and vitamins in general. And so he really was very, very hard on himself to rebuild or build his body. And then in the First World War, he was asked to train the soldiers and everything like this. And he built it actually with his out of hospital beds. He was involved in the hospital. I think he was actually even incarcerated, but worked in the hospitals, out of hospital beds with the springs and everything like this. He built exercise equipment. And then he was really, really harsh man. He wasn't a pleasant man, because I'm just reading an old biography about him, and it's from a friend of his. And he was really a very harsh, this is it and nothing else. Probably very wow. German. I don't know. I shoot myself in the foot there, Mike. And so he built all these out of beds and chairs and whatsoever and so on, and said exercise would save the nation. And he did have remarkable results in the with the soldiers. Then they wanted to have him training the soldiers, and he didn't want that. And went to America by boat, met his wife there, and landed in New York. And he built his own Pilates studio, mainly at this stage for rehabilitation of dancers. And then, but nobody really knew about Pilates. And he called it not Pilates, he called it Contology, which is probably a better name for it. But I think it would drive everybody away because it sounds a little bit like,
right,
like exactly like hospital beds and really not nice. But it is the control of your mind over your body. And that was, he was very, very strict about that, that you can control every single muscle in your body with your mind. And that is really true. It is very different to yoga, actually. And don't know very much about yoga, but it's a very disciplined. If you think about the pillars of Pilates are stamina, relaxation, centering, concentration, balance, focus, breathing, precision, and alignment.
It sounds of like yoga to me.
I can't see yoga.
I get it because I do yoga. But yeah. I did Pilates, and I had a very different experience. I worked different muscles. I didn't have to focus so much on the relaxation, because yoga is a preparation for meditation. So you're going to a different thing. When I did Pilates, I felt again that it was more muscle and weight training, weight resistance, and that burns a lot of fat. And I see a lot of ballerinas. I see a lot of athletes that really focus on that, but stretching and having the elasticity in the body is another thing. As I told you in the green room, I started back roller skating.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. The first day I was a little clumsy. When I got on them the second time, I had, you know, I could feel muscles that I had not used before. Places that were stiff, I wake up, they're a little stiff, but they're not like they were. We have to use our mind. We have to use our body.
Yeah.
The significance of that. So when you're teaching a Pilates class, what would be some instructions that you would give to a beginner that's really looking to venture into that type of exercise modality?
First of all, relax and not trying to be a perfectionist. Mm. Because that's my soapbox. It's the perfect Pilates class, and the perfect Pilates teacher is, when I done my Pilates training, we were taught that we have to do every single exercise 150%, and otherwise we wouldn't be a good Pilates instructor, which makes us totally unrelatable, because and that's not what my Pilates sessions are about, and not my, I call it my Pilates family. Is about, because actually I spoke to a friend today and I said it's imperfect Pilates. Mm-hmm. Because you will never be perfect, because if you're perfect, that's the end of the journey. And Pilates is a journey, because you're growing every single time. So if you come as a beginner into my class, I put beginners and advanced people together, because we can all learn from each other, because we're all moving differently. Our bodies are all different. So I teach you to move through your body and feel into your body. What does it feel like? I've asked you constantly, where do you feel it? I teach Pilates only via Zoom. So I rely on the feedback of my clients. So I probe them literally through the screen. They know that by now. But I ask them, where do you feel it? And if you don't feel it in the right space, then I know that you're doing it wrong. And then we have to adjust the exercise. I'm by now so well trained that I can see it and I can feel it in my own body, what you're doing wrong. I can feel your pain. Wow. In my body. And I'm so attuned. And because I come from a background in knee pain and lower back pain and back pain in general, where I had to start Pilates to help it. My physio at that stage says, Christiana, why don't you start Pilates? Because that's the other option, is a backup. And I didn't want to have a backup. I was an adrenaline-driven aerobic instructor, spinning instructor, kickboxing instructor, step instructor, and whatever. Since whatever, over 25 years. And now somebody says to me, I have to have a backup. That would have been the end of it. And so I went to a Pilates class. I hated it. I never hated something so much. As a fellow instructor, I would never walk out of a Pilates out of any class, because I know this is horrible. But I did got up and walk out of that class. That's how terrible the instructor was, and I felt in this class. At that stage, I wasn't a Pilates instructor. A couple of years later, I met then my future head of the school where I then learned for Pilates, and I overheard her. And I was at a point at a time where I went through a separation and I needed to stand on my own feet and open something up for my own. I had a 9-year-old by that stage, so I needed to have that fitting and I needed to make a plan. And so I started it and I loved it. I absolutely fell in love with it. And because you know what? In Pilates, you work your stabilizers. That's the least muscle to use every day. You find them now in roller skating, but our normal mobilizers, the big muscles we have, which we use every day.
Me and the core. But if you work your core, you know, I have a little sciatica that will really strengthen it. But working on that core, you can do it standing up. Can you do Pilates sitting down? You know, you can do yoga sitting down. You can do chair exercise. Are there exercises that you can do with Pilates?
Yeah, see, when I came to the UK now, I sold all my big equipment, and I literally teach either out of my room or out of the lounge downstairs. Wow. Into your lounge. So it's only with small equipment. I use chairs, broomsticks, wine bottles, rings, books, you name it.
Oh, wow. You can
use anything, because it also has to be fun. Let's face it, you don't do anything what isn't fun. If you wouldn't enjoy your roller skating and somebody says to you, oh, you have to do 100 laps every day, you wouldn't go.
No. When I'm around the house now, I am going to incorporate more of my steps. So when I'm folding the clothes, you know, I'm dancing, or, you know, when I'm putting away the dishes, I'm doing some squats. I'm really trying to move the body, because if you don't move it, you will lose it. And you have done a phenomenal job. You've covered everything from soup to nuts. I thank you so much, Christiane. You are, you know, you're doing it, and you're a living example of it. Your skin is glowing. I was telling you in the green room, you cut your hair, and it just is very striking. It's very beautiful. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you so that we can get some online classes. Brains, I'm going to join you, okay? I'm going to do a Pilates class.
You want me to put it in the chat?
We're going to put it at the back of the video, and we're going to put it in the show notes. And I'm going to come on board and definitely check it out, because I'm excited about it. I've seen the machines and I've seen the instructors, and I took one class and it wore me out. It was intense.
But yeah, the machines you won't have with me anymore. I sold mine. So I found my different niche now, and the niche is really for people who don't want to go into a big group of people into the gym. My niche is really for everybody, because I don't want this skinny blonde bimbo in my class or something like this. That's not me. There's loads of instructors for them out there. I want everybody in my class who feels that they want to be part of a Pilates family and not just being a number. No matter what size, high, wide, tall, whatever, we can all do it. And I want to break that myth that people say, oh no, you have to be skinny and long and a ballet dancer or something like this to do successfully Pilates. This is the biggest BS of my life. It is really, you want to enjoy it. We laugh and giggle a lot. We make nonsense, but we work hard.
Well, and that's important. And I think Pilates, what I've just seen, it is a really accelerated way of curvation. You know, building your arms, building your legs, building your butt. Because again, you're working those big muscles. You're working those big core muscles. And I appreciate that. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Christiane.
Okay. So to book my free Pilates classes, you're going to go. I'm actually just put it into your chat there also.
Okay.
You can see me at christianeeber.com bookings. That's my website under bookings. And you can book a free Pilates class there. The first class is always free. And because you can't participate in something which you don't know about, you need to try it out first. And then I really would encourage you to also join my Pilates Facebook group, because it's nice to interact. I think you are in there as well.
Yes.
And that is the Facebook group, My Core. I put the link in there. And then I have for everybody a free gift. That's a 17-minute back and stretch video I've done. So if they click on the link up there to receive the free gift, I hope it works because it's not underlined, then
well, I'll get it from you again to make sure that they get it. Go in and try it, brains. It's different. It's different than yoga. It's different than Zumba. Is different than, you know, regular aerobics, but it is definitely something to try.
Yeah.
If you're looking to really kind of shape, but also, again, retain that elasticity. Mothers, we want to encourage you, whether you are breastfeeding or not, that you love and nurture your child, that you love and nurture yourself, that you,
and you can bring your baby to our class.
Look at that. You can bring the baby to the class. Now that's interesting. That'd be good.
We have lots of baby. Actually, my daughter-in-law wrote a review. It was very funny. And she said, and Christiane's and mom's classes or Christiane's classes, they're very interesting. We work very hard for, but from time to time you hear a child hollering from the toilet, "Mom, wipe my bum."
Oh my God. Is that the cutest thing? But it's good to incorporate the family. And then, you know what? You don't feel like you've missed out on anything. You don't feel like you sacrificed. It's just another way of bonding. So thank you so much. Brains, we want you to go in, like, love, share every single thing. We want you to subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything. And all of the information and the knowledge that you're going to gain is really going to level you up and tighten you up. Okay, so thank you again, Christiane. I don't know why I Thank you so much for being here on The Edge. Please keep us abreast of what's going on. I'm going to try this Pilates in between roller skating. I'm telling you, brains, in about 6 months, I'm going to be fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye.